from 12 News, this is Newsmakers.
Is it robbing Peter to pay Paul or an answer to a decades-long pension problem in Providence? Mayor Jorge Elorza wants to borrow more than $700 million to shore up the city's beleaguered retirement plan, but the idea got an ice-cold reception from the state's general treasurer. Welcome to Newsmakers. I'm Tim White alongside 12 News politics editor Ted Nisi, and our guest this week is Providence Mayor Jorge Elorza. Mayor, it's good to see you back in person again.
It's great to be on here.
Let's start with that topic. You want to float a bond to borrow anywhere between $700 million and $850 million and put it into the city's pension fund, which is only 22% funded. In a letter to the General Assembly this week, General Treasurer Seth Magaziner called your idea, quote, a risky strategy with a mixed track record and a gamble. Yeah. What do you say to him?
So a lot of different things. The first is, you know, we got to remember that this is a ticking time bomb for the city. The reality is that we don't have many options, many good options. And so we're going to continue to press this conversation to make sure that it's on the fore of everyone's mind, because it's something that has to be addressed. It's something that we can't kick the can down the road any longer on. So I'll say something about the general treasurer. I'll say that, you know, what I appreciate about him is that he is genuinely taking the time to understand not only what it is that we're doing, but why we're trying to do it. So I've had several conversations directly with him, and it's my experience that when we explain to folks not the general thoughts around pension obligation bonds, but the particular circumstances that Providence is in, also with the particulars of the plan that we're putting forward, we win people over. And so we're answering all of his questions, and I'm hopeful that we can come up with a solution that not only he will support, but we can have even broader support for. But I think this is really important to remember, that we're on an unsustainable path right now, and doing nothing is not an option. And so I know folks have raised concerns, and some have just come out and said, I'm dead set against it. But if you're against this, then I'm assuming that you're against this because there's a better option out there. And we need to push and ask them, well, if not this, what are we going to do? Because doing nothing is not an option. So it's important to tackle this issue, and we're going to keep this issue in the conversation going.
You know, you're not going to like to hear this, but as I canvass folks at the State House, I hear a ton of skepticism, and it's hard right now for me to see this passing with just a couple weeks left. And you've said the timing right now is very important. You said in your testimonies I listened to tonight, the risk of doing nothing is very grave and severe. What happens if this doesn't happen right now?
Yeah, well, we know that think about the city's budget as a whole. We have most of our costs under control. They're still out of whack in terms of how they should be, but at least growth over the years is under control. We're going to be able to handle it. The one cost in our budget that's growing at a rate faster than our revenue is the pension side. And so what's going to happen is, as this continues to grow, it's going to squeeze out all of the other investments on the other parts of the budget. And so we're going to have to cut deeper and deeper into the bone. And that's just something that our residents and the city can't afford. So at one point or another, the city will likely re-amortize. But re-amortizing is costly.
And it literally kicks the can down the road.
Like a remortgage.
That's all it does. And when that moment comes, you know, interest rates might not be low, and the pension obligation bond proposal might not be on the table, might not be available. And so, you know, we're looking at, you know, very bad options in front of us. You know, this is not a situation where there's the ideal. Once people understand the specific circumstances that we find ourselves in, that's when the pension obligation bond begins to make a lot more sense. And look, I get it. This is really, really complicated. It takes a lot of time to explain and digest the information. What we are finding is when people genuinely sit down and go through and understand the circumstances and the proposal, we win them over. So what we need to do is just get out there and make the case and explain to folks, you know, why this makes sense.
What do you do if it doesn't pass, if they leave and go home and they didn't enact it? You've talked about now, is it's not something you can talk about for 10 years and maybe do later.
Yeah. So, you know, we're exploring all of our options right now. There are not many good options. So we're going to keep pushing over the next couple of weeks in the General Assembly. You know, there is talk about the General Assembly coming back at some point in the fall. You know, I hope that this doesn't extend into the fall, But we're dead set on making as strong a push as possible so that we can start with this right away. And if we get approval, you know, do this before interest rates begin to rise, and this option is no longer available.
You say you're exploring many options. This option's comes up from time to time. Is bankruptcy one of them?
Yeah, bankruptcy really isn't an option. I find myself explaining why it isn't very, very often. People want to know, well, what would happen if we go to bankruptcy? Well, first of all, you have to be quote unquote insolvent. You can't be able to pay your everyday bills. We are far from that right now. But let's say things go south, things go really sour, and we do find ourselves insolvent. Then what the city would have to do, we'd have to have maximum tax increases for a series of years. We'd have to significantly cut services. We wouldn't be able to touch the pension liability, but we would have to cut services before we even get before a bankruptcy court judge. If we do get before a bankruptcy court judge, then very likely we're going to see, you know, much more pretty hefty tax increases. I think this would be terrible for the city. And an even further reduction in services. And our legal advisors tell us that, you know, it's interesting enough, you know, people think that maybe if we go to bankruptcy, we can wipe out this pension liability or at least significantly cut it. The reality is that there's very little case law in this, but drawing from the case law that does exist, our advisors tell us that the unfunded pension liability is likely to remain almost entirely intact. Part of the unique circumstances that we have, and that's different from other cities that have gone bankrupt, is we have the 2012 consent decree, which basically creates a floor, and we have the Supreme Court opinion from a year and a half ago. So this is not a soft liability that we may or may not be able to pay. This is a hard liability. And the case that we're making with the pension bond, folks say, why are you taking on more debt? The reality is that we're not taking on more debt. This is already a hard debt that we have because of the pension, and what we would be doing is much more akin to a refinancing, taking that debt and replacing it with debt at much more favorable terms.
One more question on this. There's so much to talk about with you. I don't want to over-litigate the pension stuff, but former Councilman Zurier put in a letter to the House Finance Committee, and his issue was the fact that right now this does not call for voters to get to vote on the pension bond. I think this might be the biggest one-time borrowing in Rhode Island history, let alone Providence. Why not at least call a special election and let the voters endorse this like they can with much smaller bonds?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, we don't know how long this window of opportunity is going to last, but if that's the concern, then I'm very flexible with the proposal that we put forward. And if that's what's stopping this from going forward, I'm happy to put it to a special election and put it to the voters.
All right, I want to change topics. Our colleague Courtney Carter spent some time at a homeless encampment on Wilson Street. The 15 homeless people who have set up a tent city there were given 48 hours notice by City Hall to clear out of there. Did you authorize that?
So this is our policy in the city. And, people living in tents, that's not a solution. It's not a permanent solution. It's not a temporary solution. Now, what I've said publicly and I've said directly to the spokespeople from the encampment that I've spoken with is, you know, we're going to do the compassionate thing. We're not going to put them out on the street with nowhere to go. We're going to make sure that they have a roof over their head, be it a shelter or a hotel room or whatever it takes, while they're searching, you know, while we're working all together to find a permanent solution to where they're going to go. So, I've been in touch directly with the folks, and I look forward to sitting down with the folks in the encampment to get a sense of, you know, what is it that they need? How can we support them? How can we
solve the situation? You'll have to do that soon, right? I mean, the notice went out. We're taping on a Friday.
Yeah.
Notice went out 24 hours ago. They got 24 hours left. So today, you're going down there today?
Yep. So I'm hoping to set something up for today. So hopefully in the very near future, I'll be sitting down with them. I want to understand them. I want to talk to them directly, and I'm confident that, you know, if we all put our, you know, problem solver hat on, we can solve this issue together, just as we solve so many issues in the city. But you know, I think most of us agree that people living in tents is not a solution. You know, it's not a permanent solution, and it's not a temporary solution.
You know,
either.
This is something that you have an expertise in. You are a former housing court judge,
yeah.
And this is a an issue you're going to have to put a Band-Aid on now with the Wilson Street encampment down there. But the issue is so much broader here, Mayor. I don't have to tell you, the cost of housing in the Northeast alone, forget Providence, is sky high, and that affects rent. As these costs continue to go up, are you expecting to see more tent cities in Providence?
We do expect to see this on the rise. Part of the challenge is that I believe the state had a contract with a hotel in Warwick that was recently not renewed, and so there were spaces available for folks. Now that those spaces aren't available, you know, we do expect to see situations like this on the rise. You know, one of the biggest challenges, or you know, part of the reason why it's so hard to be in this role as mayor, is that regardless of what level of government or what level of society the solutions lie or the causes are, you know, the challenges, they manifest themselves at the local level. And you know, we don't have all of the resources that other folks do at different levels, but still, you know, we have to work with what we have to find solutions. And that's why I'm going to sit down with them to find a common solution that not only provides a temporary, but we work towards a long-term fix.
So you and I talked about 2 months ago about the big infusion of cash that's coming to Providence under President Biden's American Rescue Plan Act, well over $100 million over a couple of years. You don't have to spend it all at once. Last time we talked, one of the ideas you mentioned was helping small businesses in the city move their operations online, but you've certainly had 2 more months to think about it, talk about it, talk with others. What else are you thinking about right now, thinking about that unique infusion of money that's coming from the feds?
Yeah, there's so many things that we're looking at right now. We're also committed to a process, so working with the city council, we created a committee, and they're going to be reaching out to the broader community and proposing recommendations to us. So, you know, I'm very open to the kinds of things that we'll do, but I'll tell you some of my priorities that I would like to see done. So supporting our small businesses and making sure that they're ready for the post-pandemic economy. I'm also very interested in supporting youth throughout the city and out of school time, meaning making investments before they enter kindergarten and deeper investments during the summer and making sure that they continue to learn and grow wherever they are throughout the city. I'm also very interested in supporting infrastructure projects throughout the city. Housing is an important part of it, and I think that, you know, speaking about the unsheltered encampment that we're experiencing right now, you know, thankfully we have some resources that we can use to address this at a structural, at a permanent level. So there's so much that we want to do, but I want to make sure that we're taking full advantage of this. You know, this is a once in a lifetime, once in a generation opportunity. Let's make deep investments that prepare our city for the post-pandemic world, make sure that this money, that these resources, they provide that foundation for the world, for the city that we want to create going forward. So I'm really excited about what's to come, and I'm open-minded about the investments we'll make.
Quick technical question. Has any of the money hit the city's bank account yet? I know the, like, application could now be put in.
It came in about a week ago, yes.
Okay, so you're just getting interest now?
Yeah, and part of it, too, is, you know, explicitly part of this money is for revenue replacement. So we've lost revenue over the past couple of years, and it provides support for our budget. So as part of the budget that we have already proposed to the city council, we're already planning to use part of those dollars, but it still leaves over $100 million for us to invest in creative and forward-thinking ways.
All right, we're going to take a break here on the program. When we come back, the turmoil in the Providence Public Schools. Stay with us. 12 News Politics editor Ted Nisi, our guest this week, is Providence Mayor Jorge Elorza. I want to pivot to Providence Public Schools Mayor. Yeah. Dr. Javier Montañez was picked as a temporary superintendent for Providence Public Schools. Once again, you weren't invited to that announcement. Is that insulting to you?
I don't get into any of that. Let me say, Dr. Montañez, he's an incredible, incredible human being. He was homeless at one time, then got his PhD, now leads our district. As people get to know him, they're going to fall in love with him. Really, really great,
great
guy.
He does have a remarkable story. However, do you want him to be the permanent guy?
However, there is not a human being alive that's going to be able to turn around this district with the existing contract. That is just the reality. That's why we brought in the state. The whole idea, right, the state doesn't have any magical, anything magical about running the district that we don't have. But they do have the power under the Crawley Act to reform the contract. That's why we brought them in. But it's been about 2 years, and still there's been zero progress on reforming this contract. You know, there's so many things that need to be done. We need the right leader, we need the right policies, we need the right investments. But the linchpin to all of this is we got to reform the contract. Unless the contract gets reformed, all of these things, we're sort of nibbling at the margins and the edges. We need to completely turn around a district that's been failing our kids for 40 years, a district that's the poster child for structural racism, a district that serves adults at the expense of kids. That's why we brought the state in, because they can change the contract. However, it's been 2 years, they still haven't done it, and I'm going to keep pressing that we need to change the contract ASAP.
Can we get concrete? You know, is there, you know, I know there's a million things in the contract, yeah, and there's a million things you're probably thinking about, but, you know, at a high level, if you had to name the top two or three things that are in that contract that you think hold back Providence schools that you want the state to change, what are they?
Yeah, so you're right. There's a myriad of issues. And when you talk to principals, they say everything gets grieved. Everything. And it limits their ability to just, you know, run their own schools, run their own departments. So part of it is just everything. It's too thick. But to answer your question, Ted, you know, what's at the heart of it? At the heart of it is seniority. Seniority privileges, that's the sacred cow for the Providence Teachers Union.
I can hear teachers exploding at home, you know, senior teachers, why do you want to get rid of the teachers who've been here? You know, we're not the problem.
Yeah, you know, say a principal, a teacher that's been there for a long time is just not delivering for kids, and should be moved, should be transferred, should be reassigned, a principal effectively can't do anything of that because they have seniority, they have privileges. You know, again, it's a system that serves adults at the expense of kids. And so at the heart of it, we got to address, and we don't have to completely eliminate seniority, but now seniority counts for pretty much the entire bit, and it ties the hands of principals. Just as I said that, as phenomenal as Dr. Montañez is, it's impossible to turn around the district under the existing contract. It's the same thing at the school level. You can have a phenomenal principal, the most capable, competent person, but it's impossible for them to turn around the schools under the existing contract, and seniority is at the heart of the reason why.
You know, I've done a few stories on as you term it, the difficulty of moving on from teachers that might be ineffective. But the flip side of that, when you talk to folks in the union, they say, no, that's a failure on the administration. There is a process in which they can move on from ineffective teachers, but they just don't do the work that needs to be done leading up to that point.
Technically true, but in practice, it's very misleading. So it's not only the contract, but it's also state law on top of it,
right,
that gives them so many protections. You know, a principal can easily spend his entire day and weeks and months trying to remove one bad teacher. That's how onerous the process, and then you have arbitration. It's just such an onerous process. So in reality, it's virtually impossible to remove bad teachers. And, you know, I'll say that, you know, I've tried to reform a contract through negotiations, and I think you all remember what happened. You know, I had 300, 400 teachers shouting me down. You know, when I wouldn't budge, they did work to rule, meaning they wouldn't perform anything beyond what they were mandated to do under the contract. They were willing to sacrifice the children so that they could get more leverage at the negotiation table. And remember, when they can't get what they want at the negotiation table, then they go to the General Assembly and they change state law. They get evergreen contracts. Look, if you look at the last 40 years in the Providence School Department, the most powerful entity has not been mayors, superintendents, school boards, commissioners. The most powerful entity has been the Providence Teachers Union. So at some point, you know, when we look at the failing district and who's responsible, who's accountable for, you know, we just have to acknowledge that they hold all the leverage. And I don't see a world where they agree to give up seniority and many of the privileges that they've been able to bake into the contract and into state law. That's why, look, I've been there, done that. Let's not repeat the same mistakes of the past and the past and the past and the past. The state has the power to change the contract. Let's just get on with it. I know it's a tough decision. I know it's going to be messy. I know that people are going to flip out. They're going to be really upset. But it's got to be done for our kids, and it's about time we do it.
Mayor, I don't exactly think of you as a Republican, a conservative, or anything like that. And yet, when I tweeted out an essay you wrote the other day about this issue, the blowback from progressives, and I generally think of you as a progressive on most of the issues, was enormous, that you're trying to union bust, that you're blaming labor unions, talking about you like some of the Republican governors who are very controversial. What do you say to people you generally consider your allies on the in the Democratic Party on the left who say you can't, you know, you shouldn't be doing this, you shouldn't be targeting a union, labor unions are part of our coalition?
Yeah. So I would say, if we're talking about supporting unions, you know, when I think about supporting unions, I think about, you know, the little guys banding together and taking on the powers that be, taking on the empire. That's a righteous cause that I can get behind. But what has happened specifically with the Providence Teachers Union is that the Providence Teachers Union has become the empire. And they're acting like the power that be. They're looking to protect their advantage and to protect their privilege. They do that through seniority. They do that through evergreen contracts. And we can appeal to them all we want that let's do the right thing for our kids. But, you know, let's just be honest about it. Union leadership, they have a fiduciary responsibility to look out for their members. Their fiduciary responsibility is not to look out for the kids, it's to look out for their members. So I almost don't even blame the executive committee, right? The issues aren't particular to one person, they're structural. And that's why we need to address it at a structural level. And I don't think there's anyone who would disagree that the contract stands in the way of progress. The contract stands in the way of change that our kids need and deserve. And that's what I want to continue focusing on. All of these things matter, but it's not truly going to move the needle unless we change the contract. We set it up so that the state can just come in and do it, but it just hasn't happened yet. Let's get on with it. Let's do it.
Mayor, before we walked into the studio, your campaign sent out an email seeking people to chip in $10, $15, $20 to your campaign. You are term limited as mayor. Is that money going to be used for a potential run for governor?
Yeah. You know, that's something that I'm looking at. I've been public about exploring it. But I'll tell you, we just have so many important irons in the fire right now. What I can say unequivocally is that my focus is on, you know, these next 3 weeks, making sure we pass our budget here at the city level, making sure that we continue to press the issue at the General Assembly on statewide issues, and just focus on getting the job done. If I do choose to run, really the most important thing is my track record here in the city. So, you know, let's just focus on getting the job done here in Providence, and those things will take care of themselves.
When do you think you need to decide?
Yeah, I don't know, maybe 3, 4, 5 months from now, I'd say.
Okay.
You think there's a lot of time. Some people have said to me that since there's now an incumbent Democratic governor and it's not an open seat like we'd all thought it might be when Gina Raimondo was still here, maybe the mayor should consider running for a different office, like Secretary of State or Treasurer, that's going to be open. Would you consider that?
No, to be honest with you, remember, I don't come from politics. When I was younger, I swore that I would never run for office. I don't enjoy the politicking and the pure politics part of it. What I like about this is just putting a problem-solving hat on and fixing problems, solving some of the challenges that we have. And you can do that best at the executive level. That's why, you know, being Providence mayor is not only the toughest political position in the state, but it's the best political position in the state. I've loved every part of it because I'm a problem solver every single day. And I'm only interested in one that allows me to problem solve at another level.
Briefly, do you think you'll endorse your own potential successor in that race?
It depends. You know, it's so hard to build up, and it's so easy for things to just fall apart. So, you know, there are a lot of good candidates in the race right now. If I believe that, you know, independent of ideology, but if I believe that perhaps someone is emerging that just doesn't have what it takes to, you know, be a good mayor, I'll likely get involved. But as long as there are good, competent, capable people that look like, you know, they're going to be the next mayor, I don't see myself getting involved.
Mayor, we have a little over a minute here, and I did want to ask you about this before we ran out of time. Summer's coming up,
yeah.
And there's a deadline for application for youth programs and summer jobs. What do people need to know?
Yeah, so that's been a big investment that we've made over the years. Let's put more kids in opportunities where they can learn and earn during the summer. So we've, I believe, tripled them, and we're looking to increase these jobs. So go to PVD Summer Jobs or Summer Jobs PVD. It's all on our website to apply. Anyone from 14 to 24 years old qualifies. And this year we've made a commitment that every youth working for us is going to make a minimum of $15 an hour. So please, if you know youths looking for a job this summer, have them visit our website or call 311, and we'll do everything we can to set them up.
We got about 30 seconds left. Do you have a sense as to how many bars and restaurants didn't survive the pandemic in Providence?
I don't have a fixed number. I know a lot of them really struggle. Some of them just kind of clinged on for dear life.
Right.
But to all of them, I tell them, you know, anything that my office is, what we can do, anything we can do to support you, either extending your premises or anything creative that you come up with, we're game. We'll give anything a try if it's going to support you and help you, you know, as we get to the other side of this pandemic.
A little bit of optimism, hopefully, going into the summer as restrictions are lifted. Providence Mayor Jorge Elorza, thank you so much for joining us on the program. If you missed any of it, it's on WPRI.com. For Ted Nisi, I'm Tim White. We'll see you next week.